For each consistent formal theory, 27 having the required small amount of number theory, the corresponding Gödel sentence, 5 asserts, 29 cannot be proved within the theory, 7. This interpretation of 18 leads to the following informal analysis. If 156 were provable under the axioms and rules of inference of 103, then 8 would have a theorem, 7, which effectively contradicts itself. Welcome. Today on our podcast, we're going to be speaking about meaning, existentialism, nihilism, the absence of God,
intense eyeballs,
black Nazis,
interesting camera work montages that were done in with spiraling and wobble frames,
all taking place within the 6 claustrophobic walls of the 1997 film Cube. We're inside a cube, folks.
Beware what you hath unleashed.
Beware what you hath trapped in the cube, for also it may true. Be yourself.
Oh, yeah. Profound.
So, Cube. This is a movie I've seen way more times than I should have seen, because it's pretty bad. But it also has a lot of profound truth grains hidden in there.
It does have some kernels of truth.
Within, like, the each fourth cube is a truth chestnut just waiting to be uncracked.
Yes, about our human condition, about ourselves, where we are in the world.
What really matters.
Our perspective on things.
So many questions, few answers.
Only Canadian filmmakers will put...
So the Cube series is actually a series.
It's a trilogy.
Cube 2 Hypercube, my favorite of the series. No, number 1's my favorite.
Hypercube.
Because there's something even more intense about the cubes in Cube 2.
Hypercube.
And then Cube 3, which I can't remember what Cube 3 was called.
Cube 3, I believe it's called Cube 0 or Zero Cube.
Cube 0, maybe.
Cube 0. 0 calories in that cube.
So let's just give you a quick little synopsis of Cube so that you can understand the kind of shit we're dealing with here.
Yes. So it's not unlike films that came out much later, like Saw, where people just wake up in a room.
Right.
And they have to find a way out of it. It's not nearly as gory and gratuitously violent, I would say.
No.
They're not chained to, you know, a rusty bandsaw. And there's not, like, a puppet somewhere.
I think it has more in common with classic Twilight Zone episodes.
Oh, yep, absolutely.
Than like, torture porn movies. But it has elements of both. Really what it is kind of a... It's kind of a logic puzzle within the narrative framework of a movie. And part of watching the movie is trying to figure out, is there going to be a logical explanation?
Right.
Or is this all just going to be a bullshit metaphor?
For life on Earth. Everything is pointless. It doesn't matter what you
do. Cube has a really wonderful opening scene. By wonderful, I mean horrifically violent. In which a really creepy looking kind of skeletal man wakes up inside
this. He's like Ichabod Crane in there.
He is like Ichabod Crane. Maybe that's who it is. Ghost of Christmas Cubed! Oh wait, that's not what I... What was I thinking of?
You were thinking of Ebenezer Scrooge.
Okay, well, he's also like Ebenezer Scrooge.
Ebenezer Cubed!
In any case, this crone-like figure wakes
like
up...
like a Skeksis also.
He is. He wakes up in this, like, industrial... Actually, I think they did a really good job
with
the set.
Well, I'm sure
they only had to make one.
Right. their budget was probably very minimal. And one I read cube. That the special effects that they did use, which we're about to talk about, were given to them for free in support of Canadian films.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, which they needed it. It definitely helped.
Canadian film. What? How many can we really name? Not that many. So anyway, this old man wakes up in this cube that is all like lit up and cool looking. That has one door, one hatch on each of its six walls.
Right, and the walls themselves are like covered in this strange.
Looks like a motherboard.
Motherboard, like alien type map or something like that. Yeah, some blueprints or something.
So he wakes up and he's in this kind of like prison kind of Dickensian outfit. And he looks like he just got out of debtor's prison or something in 1820.
Yeah.
And so he like unhatches one of these doors and climbs through into the next cube. And every time you go from one cube to the next, it's a different color of lighting.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes into the next room. And he's walking across the floor when all of a sudden, and then you just see on his face a little square line of blood.
Grid work.
And then you realize that he has been filleted.
Or a sailor.
He's been cubed. And then his body crumbles apart in cubes.
Like old fruitcake.
But moist. Still moist. Moist. Well, I can say one thing, that fruitcake wasn't dry.
That's a family secret.
And he falls to the ground and he is no more. And then the screen fades to white and singular cube. The letters that form the word cube appear. And that's basically the premise of the movie, is there's this gigantic box that's like a Rubik's Cube.
Yes.
And human beings are trapped inside. And
some are booby-trapped, some are not.
Maybe like a tenth.
Lord, I have no idea.
I mean, you know, this movie's all about math, and yet it's so abstract.
Philosophy. Yeah, both, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the characters in the movie.
What do we have? We have seven total, but Homeboy, cubed in the beginning, gets axed immediately.
Right. That's called foreshadowing.
Yes. And you find that the characters kind of clamber into one cube together in quick succession, because of course we need to know who they are.
They find each other.
Mm-hmm. And just the basic rundown... is it that we first see? It's Worth, I think it is. He's just kind of laying up against a wall.
Just a generic white guy, just in the cube.
Mm-hmm.
You think he might be, like, catatonic.
Yeah, he's just laying there.
And then the guy who turns out to be the villain of the whole thing, the cop,
mm-hmm.
Quentin,
mm-hmm, yes.
Crawls up through the floor with a bloody hand! And then we have a classic bloody hand shot up through the floor.
And his... signature intense eyeballs of this actor whose name is...
Well, it's the actor from Hedwig who plays Hedwig's sugar daddy. And,
I just know this guy. I mean, he's got a great set of teeth in his mouth.
His face is dynamic.
Yes. They're almost crocodilian, I would say.
He does cry some crocodile tears in this movie.
Yes, he does.
Does anyone care what his name is? It's Maurice Dean Wint.
So he's our second person to come into the cube.
And we find out that he used to be a cop, and that's where he gets his kind of masochistic authoritarian characterization in this movie.
He's just full of rage.
He's full of rage, and he also really does not want to speculate on the potential meaninglessness.
Oh, absolutely. His Later whole thing is always about, let's just look and see what's in front of us and deal with that, the task at hand.
He's just trying to...
He's not a big picture guy.
He's trying to find a solution. He's trying to get out. He's survivalist.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have...
the doctor?
The doctor, who is an older lady who is pretty annoying.
Holiday? I didn't find her that annoying.
Well, she's kind of a conspiracy theorist and also kind of, like, hella paranoid and likes to rant about things.
I'm going to say this to you.
Okay.
If you just wake up in a cube somewhere and you're just in a prison jumpsuit, your mind's going to be reeling, okay?
No, this movie is partly all about how different people react to a stress scenario.
Yeah.
And, but I'm just going to say this. She was carrying some baggage in from the outside of the cube. Okay?
Weren't they all?
Because she's very quick to go to aliens as a suggestion of why they're all there. And one of them's like, look, let's not talk about aliens yet. Okay. And then we have the young girl who is pretty and just supposed to be maybe like 16 or 17 or 18. And she turns out to be somewhat of a math genius.
Whiz. I don't know if I would say genius.
Well, it's because she sucks in a lot of other ways.
Yeah.
But she's the one who starts to figure out that on each door there is a set of 9 numbers.
Yes. Though there's 3 sets of 3-digit numbers.
1 set of 9 numbers.
But they're separated. Wouldn't you say it's 3 sets of...
9 digits?
All right, forget it.
Kind of looks like a phone number with one missing off the end.
Okay.
They never thought of calling anyone on those numbers.
Yeah, too bad they didn't bring their cell phones in there with them,
1997. What? Anyway, so she looks at these numbers and eventually figures out that she can tell which rooms are booby-trapped and which rooms are not.
Because
based
if they're
on...
prime, is that right?
Yeah, some of them are prime. Which turns out to be a fallacy later in the film.
It does with... When our jailbird, the notorious Wren, a French guy who's known for breaking out of many prisons, he follows her suggestion to go into one of the rooms because it's prime, and he turns around. Does he say, like, Sacre Bleu?
No, you just wish he did.
Or does he say, like, what is the word?
Merde.
Merde. He turns around and goes, merde, and he gets just blasted in the face with acid.
And then instead of screaming and closing the door on him, they pull him back into the room just to watch his face get eaten away by acid, which,
yeah.
You know, they had some good special effects in this movie, but they only had, like, room for, like, 5 of them.
There was some cottage cheese in that acid-riddled face, for sure.
Yeah.
Or maybe tapioca pudding.
Yeah.
It was a good look, though.
It was okay.
Yeah.
They did an okay job with that. So then, about halfway through the movie, or maybe 2/3 of the way through the movie, we meet the final character, who is the autistic man, boy,
Kazan.
Child.
Sure, all of those.
20, maybe he's 20.
Maybe. And Michael Rapaport.
He looks a little bit like a young Michael Rapaport, although he's not. Only room for one Michael Rapaport in the world. He was in another
part
of the cube.
He was in another part of the queue just bucking at the doors with his gold chains.
And
oh, Michael Rapaport, why weren't you in this movie?
You know, whenever there's an autistic character in a movie, that it's, you know, especially from the 90s, that it's going to go to some pseudo-spiritual, what does it all mean? What does it really mean to be an innocent, kind of annoying place of judgment? That's what I think.
Yeah.
It always goes to, like, oh, he must be okay because he's...
Is he put there to remind the others of their humanity as well? Like, to show everybody in the group how they react to this person who is, quote-unquote, an innocent.
Yeah.
How do they react to that? Because he is a burden in ways.
Right.
They have to take special steps to accommodate him, and it's just, how do they all react in this already... hyper stressful situation.
And sometimes they get to rooms which are booby trapped based on sound, and he what
you must say, you have to lead up to this where they realize that our first character that we were introduced to, the catatonic man, reveals that he was the architect of the sarcophagus around the cubes. So right. They now know that there is a perimeter border.
Right.
And the math
A
girl,
master cube, if yes. you will.
And girl genius figures out that there's got to be an edge, and they're working their way through the cubes to get to the edge so they can pop out and hopefully be free. And they finally get to a room, and all of the other cubes, other rooms on outside of this are all booby-trapped. And the one that they decide to go on is booby-trapped by sound.
Mm-hmm. And
when you make a sound...
a sound like... which is the only sound that the autistic kid makes for a while.
Just a cavalcade of spikes come from every direction. So they're just looking at that, and he's just having a ball just looking into this room going...
It's basically, it's like the worst booby trap in the whole movie in terms of, like,
yes,
being able to avoid it. Because if you're in any inch of the room, you're going to get stabbed.
Yes.
But so then they decide.
But then also think about yourself. Like, if you were him, wouldn't you be like, there? And, like, just to see the spikes come out again, it's so tempting.
It's so tempting. So it really does provide quite a nice suspense moment in the movie.
Yeah, because even if our autistic friend, doesn't mess it up. What if you're in that room and you let out like a stress fart? Entirely possible, people.
And you know it would be one of those like real shrill ones? Just let it slip. You'd be like, no. I never meant to die farting.
So... miraculously, they all make it through the sound booby-trapped room, except for finally our cop, you know, just fueled with rage, always intense eyes. He's the last one to go through, and one of the other hatches in the room begins to open, and they're afraid that if that one opens, the door will close, but it doesn't. So, our buddy...
Kazan, the autistic kid.
He's safe in the other room.
He can barely hold it in. He has to make a sound.
So gleeful.
Because he really likes to see spikes come out of the walls. It's really exciting for him.
He lets out a ha! Quentin just narrowly escapes it. He just flings his body through the door and then the hatch closes and he's safe. But then he just starts beating on Kazan.
You know, this time watching this movie... Mm-hmm. I really went to a deep philosophical place.
No, I think it is supposed to. You're supposed to go there.
Right.
That's the intent of this
film. But I probably haven't seen this movie in like 10 years. So yeah. I really went deep. I picked up on some Nietzsche references, mm-hmm. some Marx references, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, old Twilight Zone episode with the glasses breaking reference. It's referential.
It's definitely referential. It's supposed to make you think.
And it did. You can look at the cube as a microcosm for the universe and our place in it. And what's the meaning of hope? Do we matter in the machine?
Yeah, true.
What is the purpose of humans in the cold mathematics of the chaotic universe? That was one of my notes that I took during watching this movie.
Ooh.
So, what do you think, Natalie?
Hey, I'm going to just quote some people here. If you think we matter, we don't. There is no way out.
Oh, okay.
And then also just thinking about the catch-22 of the creation of something like this and what's its whole purpose is that it doesn't have a purpose, but it needs to be used and have a ridiculous sort of contrived purpose. Otherwise, that means that you would admit that it was pointless to begin with, right. But it is pointless that this thing exists. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's no Kafka in the penal colony. You know, it doesn't have, you can analyze it.
I think it's trying to be Kafka-esque.
It is trying to be Kafka-esque, but is it succeeding? I think that the thing that always really interested me about Cube was thinking about who built it.
Yes.
What does the outside of it look like? Which reminds me of my childhood musings on what is the edge of the universe? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's outside?
What happens out there?
The known boundaries of the universe. More universe! More cubes. It boggles the mind.
It's pretty bleak. Yikes.
It is pretty bleak. And this movie, so I think we can spoil it.
Yeah, let's spoil the shit out of this.
So everybody dies, except for the autistic kid.
Yep.
And they finally figure out that there is one cube which forms a bridge to the outside.
Right.
And finally, at the very end, they're in this cube, and everyone's getting stabbed, except for the autistic kid, who opens the door and finds just a white...
blinding light.
Which... you know, I wouldn't necessarily even say is a benevolent white light.
No.
It's just a kind of cold.
It's cold. It's clinical.
It's not hopeful in a way.
No.
It's kind of like, well, anything's got to be better than this shitty cube. Where I'll mention they don't have any food or water.
Yeah.
They suck on buttons
to keep
the saliva
hydrated.
Flowing.
Yeah. I don't know about the logic of that.
So all they got is old buttons to suck on in the cube.
I don't know. When the jailbird threw his boot in that one fire activated room, they could have had themselves some nice hot boot.
Well, I would eat my boot, but I would prefer it if it were a little charred.
Cajun style. French Cajun.
Blackened boot for dinner. Once again, getting tired of all this blackened
boot.
This
is so... that was early in the movie, this thing where they're testing the rooms by their boots before they realize the mathematical connection. And the jailbird's just like, it's clear. And I went, it's clear for boots.
Some of the rooms are hospitable to boots and not to humans. So I was also thinking about like other movies that could be like this. We've watched some movies lately that are like, just a few humans in one place. That's this genre. If you go to the video store, say, hey, where's your section? It's just a few humans in one place.
Well, is that dystopic as well?
I think what it is it pressurizes the drama.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Or at least that's what they want it to do. Mm. And then their dialogue always sucks.
Right.
Like, the dialogue in this movie sucks pretty hard.
No one calls each other by their first names because they all have these jumpsuits on with their last names on them. And my first comment was, why did they not tell each other their first names? Because I would not want to be going through cues like, come on, cook. Kill your ass, cook. Quit eating that boot, cook.
That's what we'd be saying to you. There's no time for snacking in the cube, cook. No, one of my favorite lines is when the math girl, says at one point to one of the other characters, have you been on glue all your lives? This movie is very profoundly Canadian in so many parts.
Yet I didn't hear one sorry. They were not apologetic.
I didn't hear any abouts either. About. So we recently watched a movie called ATM.
Oh, boy.
I know. You probably don't want to talk about it because it was a really, really bad experience.
But I get what you're trying to say here. A few humans in a confined space.
That movie was really bad. We shouldn't even say anything else about it. But it's just people trapped in a isolated ATM in the middle of winter in, like, Detroit or
because
somewhere.
Because one of your friends is a jagoff.
That's the problem. A lot of these movies, I feel like they write them so that all the characters are like kind of bad people, which kind of takes the element of like rooting for them or even caring how they survive out of it. I also watched that movie. I can't even remember what it's called, where they're all stuck on the ski lift for the whole thing. Did you see that too?
No, I did not. I saw that and I completely ignored it.
You know, it was better than ATM. But it was...
because there was wolves?
But it was also... everyone was cold, which... mm-hmm. And then, you know, I was in the sauna the other day, and I was like, what if there's a movie called Sauna? And everyone was hot.
Hot and in Speedos.
Trapped in there with strange older men. Who only talk about healthcare reform.
And someone's too liver with the water on the rocks.
Oh, man, it's too steamy in here. I wish I had a sauna beer.
Would it be called sauna? It would be called, like, hot box. To make it seem somewhat more frightening.
No, that would be part of the tagline. It would be like, sauna, don't let him hot box ya. Or like, hot box.
It's heating up in the
death.
Box.
you is not sexual really in any way except for the leering creepiness of the
intense
cop,
eyeball cop
Quentin,
mm-hmm. With the young math genius girl.
He's kind of a predator,
big time.
But I think
he's predatory, even like in a sexual manner, without realizing it to the other characters as well. With how close he comes up on them,
he's just a little rapey. Above.
He's very.
At one point, he's like talking to this one character, and he just straddles him and just pops his butt up in the air. You're just like, what
the guy is on the ground looking into, because there's doors in the floor, and he's looking down into it. And Quentin straddles above him, like squats above him.
But then he like pops and locks.
And I know. Why are you doing that? Horrible. And the guy does. I love this look. He looks over his shoulder, like, "What the fuck are you doing up there? Why are you hovering above me? Why do I feel your pulse?" Get your balls off my back, bro.
He's got a rage boner throughout the entire movie.
I really wish that when it gets down to just the final characters and we lose the French guy, obviously, acid in the face, and then you're like, okay, they're working together, but they're kind of strung out and all this other stuff, and Quentin becomes more and more enraged, but you think he can get a handle on it, and it kind of culminates in this scene where his main conflict is with the doctor, this older woman, Holloway.
Right.
And this is when they're figuring out that the cube has walls. And so they're lowering Holloway outside of the doorway to the edge of the cube with a rope made of all their dungarees.
They don't
clothes.
Have a good plan because they can see from the doorway that there's just a sheer wall as far as they can see.
And somehow they think, well, let's just lower someone down and they'll see something. It's a horrible plan. It's all just a contrivance to get her out there. And the big reveal happens when the cube, the whole structure begins to shake. And they almost drop Holloway. But they regain their grasp on the rope and they're bringing her up. And it's Quentin who has his hands on her. And like she's laughing. She's so relieved that he caught him. And then there's that same old look. Those crocodilian teeth. Just come down and do that.
He has a really great, he really acts the shit out of that moment. Because his face goes from like, yeah, I'm gonna save you, to psych!
To this,
and
like,
you're just like, no.
I hate you so much, you bitch.
And then her face falls. Oh, it's good.
And then she does fall.
And then she falls.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. At one point he, after they take a nap, which is a cute little scene, because they're all just sleeping on the floor of the cube, which...
In their underpants.
I don't think I'd be able to sleep. In that situation.
No, but you're just exhausted.
You're exhausted. So he, like, somehow is able to, I think maybe he, like, roofied them. He brought his roofies in with him or something. So he, like, carries the girl into the next cube. And then he has this, like, little monologue with her. It's like, it's like Shakespearean. He's talking about opposites. He's saying, man, woman.
That's how it should be in the end.
That's how it should be.
It's the mathematical equation, the most pure, something like that.
You are the perfect key. I will drag you to the bottom and slip you in the lock. Ew. And she's like, and he's groping her as he's saying this, and she's like, could you stop? Have you been on glue all your life? Are you on glue right now?
I wish she reacted in the teenage one, like, gross.
Stop touching me like that. You're old.
I think I found that character's like weird teenage-isms coming into play just sporadically, so jarring and just ridiculous.
Yeah, because she's clearly the 25-year-old woman trying to play a teenager.
And this happened when she would find, when they were first looking at the prime numbers and they would be talking and she'd just be like, ah, it's clear, cha. Like, really? Why? Why would a mathematical genius speak this way? Because she's supposed to be a teenager and she's a woman?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's too bad that she gets killed in the end because she doesn't have any fewer redeeming characteristics than the autistic kid.
Yeah.
She's perfectly sweet and innocent. So at the end, the autistic kid walks into the white light, very, very similarly to the end of the movie Powder. And a very similar stance.
Maybe that's what it is. He's just turning into the energy. The energy that fuels the cube.
Here's my theory. Yeah. Where did Powder come from? The cube. Powder came out of the cube.
While Kazan, Michael Rapaport Light, is a ginger and pale of skin. He ain't no Powder.
Oh, no. No, Powder was doing his calisthenics down there in that basement.
The basement, his grandma's basement, his own quote-unquote cube.
He gets out of there, he's pretty ripped.
He's real ripped. Mm. He's real bald. Okay. Real hairless.
I've always had a thing for albinos.
No, you haven't.
With full body alopecia.
And cerulean blue eyes.
Oh, no, of course.
They couldn't make him fully albino with the pink eyes.
No. Not sexy.
No. No. No farm girl with curly auburn hair will kiss someone with pink eyes.
Oh, boy. Powder. That's a great movie. Remember that scene when the guy kills the deer? Such a good scene. No, Powder could talk. He had a sexy, sexy voice.
Oh, wow.
Oh, boy.
You getting a little loose in your seat over there?
Always. So, this movie confirmed my atheism. And, you know, didn't really teach me anything new. I've already read The Stranger. And City of Glass by Paul Auster. It's all the same kind of message. It's like, you know, we humans can try and figure things out. We can try and crack codes.
Yeah, yeah.
But what does it matter when, you know, in this world, what are we going to live? 70, 80 years, knock on wood. What do they live in the cube? 3 days without food. Not much of a difference. 3 days, 70 years. It's all a blink of an eye.
Okay. I was going to say, I'd say there's quite a lot of difference.
Well, that's because you choose to see more meaning than I do.
And what do you think it means that the autistic kid is the one that finally escapes the cubes? Is that the innocence prevails?
I think.
Yeah.
It's that he is at peace with the meaninglessness because he does not fit with the human beings.
Mm.
He is himself like an equation or like a number.
Which makes sense because how did he survive? He survived through the rooms without them.
He wants just like chaos and he wants to
and
just
gumdrops.
Be, and rocking back and forth, you know? And he wants to be alone. He doesn't want to be touched. He doesn't want to communicate. He just wants to solve prime number, you know, prime
factors.
Prime factoring.
Permutations.
Cartesian. We did not learn any new math from this movie. This movie did not make us smarter.
I have a math story that's actually really good because she talks about Descartes and Cartesian coordinates. And this is something I learned in my math schooling.
Go on.
It's just a small story that Descartes came up with the grid system by looking at raindrops on his window.
What grid system?
Like X and Y, the grid system in Cartesian coordinates.
Oh, okay.
Because he was watching raindrops come down his window, and he came up with the grid system from that.
What a dreamer.
He was French. How French.
That's pretty cool, I guess.
Thanks.
This movie had something in common with another math movie, which is...
Pi?
Nope.
IQ?
Nope. Here, I'll give you the clue. It's not your fault.
No, not you, Sean. Not you, Sean.
It's not your fault.
No, I know, Sean. I know, Sean.
It's not your fault.
No, don't do this to me, man.
It's not your fault.
No, Sean. No, Sean.
It's not your fault.
No, Sean. No.
It's not your fault. No. Hug me. No, hug me. Hug me. It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
My father loved me, Dan.
Calm down, Matt Damon. It's not your fault, Matt Damon.
Tell me the connection.
They use the line, it's not your fault.
And Cube? I don't remember that.
Yeah. It was random.
Oh.
She just was like, it's not your fault. And I was like, was that just a reference to one of our favorite Robin Williams films? How about, what's that stupid movie with the math guy who imagines all of his friends?
Are you talking
Nash,
about...
John Nash.
Oh my god, A Beautiful Mind?
A Beautiful Mind?
You hated that movie?
That shit was some fucking, Ron, what's his name? That
Ron
was,
Howard!
That was Ron, I hate Ron Howard, so schmaltzy. That guy was an asshole! He had Jennifer Connelly. Tighten up!
He had some serious mental issues going on. He had electroshock therapy. Wow. Folks, if you could see the face she's giving right now.
Look, you know, you're smart enough to crack the codes for the FBI or whatever. Like, figure your shit out. You invent game theory.
No, cracking the codes for the FBI, that was in his mind.
I don't know.
Yeah, all right. Sounds like you really... You really thought about this before you came in to the plate with your opinions about how stupid it was.
Don't fuck with me, Sean.
Not you, Sean. Not you, Sean.
I can take it from anybody else, but not you, Sean.
Why didn't my father love me, Sean? Mickey Mocky Dad.
No more. No more.
No, not the Wahlburgers.
So we're gonna go to Wahlburgers after this episode.
That's right.
And then we're gonna make a movie called Wahlburgers, where we're just trapped there.
Oh my god!
But thank God we got burgers for life.
No kidding! Imagine being stuck at Wahlburgers. I'm sure you would actually see a Wahlberg in there at one time or another.
Welcome to Wahlburgers. I'm Donnie.
Hey, I'm just trying to talk to you. No, we gotta stop.
Well, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks, folks.
Don't get cubed.
That's how you want it.
No.